The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Ed Tremblay from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Tar Heel Junior Historian magazine, North Carolina History for Students. We'll be reading from the Spring 2021 issue, Volume 60, Number 2, Making a Living, North Carolina Industries Over Time. And the first article will be, Are We There Yet? North Carolina's Variety Vacation Land Tourism Campaign by Katie Edwards, who is a curator of popular culture at the North Carolina Museum of History. When it comes to vacations, we North Carolinians are lucky. We've got it all in our own backyard. Mountains, beaches, historic sites, and more. But the tourism industry, tourism is the activity of traveling away from home for fun and recreation. The tourism industry is also really good for our economy. It brings people from all over the country and all over the world to our state to enjoy our natural beauty and to learn more about our history. In 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic shut down most travel, especially for vacations. So while we make do with traveling the internet, perhaps it's a good time to look back to an era when North Carolina's tourism industry boomed. Popular from the 1930s to the 1970s, the Variety Vacation Land campaign marketed the state as modern, but with strong ties to its past, and a natural wonderland full of recreational opportunities for every visitor. Well, not every visitor. In the Jim Crow era, Jim Crow being the name for a system of laws in place from the late 1800s to the 1960s that enforced separation of the races and legal discrimination against blacks and other people of color. In the Jim Crow era, most of the sites promoted were open to whites only, and so people of color had to find separate areas of vacation fun. Variety Vacation Land takes flight. During the Great Depression of the 1930s, politicians and business leaders brainstormed a way to boost North Carolina's economy. They lobbied for a statewide campaign to showcase tourism attractions. This eventually led to a full-color tourist guide titled North Carolina, A Variety Vacation Land, first printed in 1937. It was soon followed by billboards, postcards, movies, television programs, and even a song. Magnificent Mountains. North Carolina's mountain region was one of the most popular draws to the state. The Blue Ridge Parkway provided breathtaking views, and tourists could reach new heights at Mount Mitchell, the state's tallest peak. Variety Vacation Land brochures also encouraged white tourists to visit the Quala Boundary, home of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, where they could purchase what they deemed as authentic Indian souvenirs and pose with Indian chiefs. Although tourism did improve the economy of the area, it did so by Hollywoodizing and even exploiting Cherokee history and culture. To satisfy tourism demands, many Cherokee men wore headdresses and stood by teepees for photos, a practice known as chiefing. These actions helped reinforce a stereotypical image of American Indians that was portrayed by Hollywood at the time, even if doing so was inauthentic to customs of the North Carolina Cherokee. However, in recent years, many efforts have been made to educate visitors about Cherokee culture and traditions. The Museum of the Cherokee Indian has expanded and includes many interactives to better reflect the 11,000-year history of the Cherokee people. Over the past few decades, several authors have worked with community input to update the outdoor drama Unto These Hills. Street signs in the area are now bilingual and include both the Cherokee language and English. The Piedmont, a modern escape. With bustling cities, modern museums, and thriving industry, the Piedmont region was sure to draw numerous visitors. The region's push for progressivism was not intended for everyone, however. Until the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 1964, Most of the tourism sites throughout the area, as well as the entire state, were open to white visitors only. State parks were among those segregated spaces. One of the few state parks open to people of color was Reedy Creek State Park in Cary, which would eventually become part of Umstead State Park. North Carolina's coast, segregated shores. Variety Vacation Land Materials also promoted North Carolina's coast as recreation meets history, with white sand beaches and historic picturesque towns. Yet many of the historic sites throughout the region focused on a romanticized depiction of white history, often ignoring those people of color who also played a role. Resorts like Seabreeze, Ocean City, and Chowan Beach were established along the coast to attract tourists who were not welcome at other larger beaches due to the color of their skin. While tourism was a popular industry throughout North Carolina in the 1900s, it has changed over time. The state's official tourism campaign, Variety Vacation Land, was only targeted at whites. In fact, the success of North Carolina's tourism industry owed a great deal to African Americans and other people of color, who made up the primary workforce in service jobs at hotels and restaurants, businesses they were not allowed to patronize. Today's tourism industry in North Carolina is open to all and relies on visitors from all over the country and around the globe. Here are the captions for the photographs accompanying this article. North Carolina is a true variety vacation land. No matter where you look on the map, you'll find something interesting and fun to do or see. Today, you can visit the Oconaluftee Indian Village at Cherokee and see authentic Cherokee history. Governor Terry Sanford poses with North Carolina Variety Vacation Land travel information trailer at the Executive Mansion in Raleigh, circa 1960s. And a family enjoys a walk on the beach during a family vacation at Ocean City Beach, circa 1964. Here are some fast facts about tourism in North Carolina. In 2019, 1 in 45 North Carolina residents are directly employed by tourism. Also in 2019, $26.77 billion were spent in tourism. 91% of trips were taken for leisure. 88% of visitors come by car. The top North Carolina tourist attractions are the Blue Ridge Parkway, Biltmore Estate, the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences, the Outer Banks, and the North Carolina Museum of History. In 2018 in North Carolina, there were 51 million visitors. The next article is Our Common Defense, North Carolina and the Military by Charlie Knight, who is curator of military history at the North Carolina Museum of History. Many of the men and women who serve in the military are a big part of our Tar Heel family. But in North Carolina, the military is also big business. Did you know that North Carolina is home to the largest military base in the world? It's true. Fort Bragg outside Fayetteville has the largest uniformed population of any military base. In terms of land size, though, it's much farther down the list with only about 160,000 acres, well behind the 3.5 million acre White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. In addition, Military Ocean Terminal Sunny Point on the Cape Fear River near Southport is the largest military terminal, a port where military supplies and ammunition are transferred to and from supply ships. And it's the largest military terminal in the world. About 150,000 active duty military personnel are stationed in North Carolina currently. Only three states have more. In addition to those personnel at the bases around the state, more than 650,000 veterans call North Carolina their home today. In short, the military is a huge part of North Carolina. From forts that guarded the western frontier, such as Fort Dobbs on Iredell County or Fort San Juan in what is now Burke County, to fortifications protecting the coast like Fort Macon at Beaufort or Fort Caswell on Oak Island, the military has had a footprint in North Carolina for hundreds of years. During the Civil War, both sides had forts and training camps in the state, but it was in the decades after the war that the military presence in the state really began to grow. Would you believe that the state fairgrounds in Raleigh was once a major military training camp? You wouldn't know it today, but the entire area around NC State University, the North Carolina Museum of Art, and the Village District neighborhood, as far out as Raleigh-Durham International Airport, was once a huge military camp. Troops trained there during the Spanish-American War in 1898 and World War I. In fact, much of the area along Raleigh's Hillsborough Street was part of the Army's Camp Polk, a World War I training base for tanks and their crews. During World War I, thousands of troops trained in the state at three major bases: Camp Green near Charlotte, Raleigh's Camp Polk, and Camp Bragg at Fayetteville. In addition, much of the state's industry switched over to making things for the military. Furniture factories in High Point made aircraft parts. Raleigh Iron Works produced artillery shells. Ships were made in Wilmington. Less than three decades later, North Carolina geared up for war again. More than 2 million military personnel passed through the state during World War II, many of them at Fort Bragg, Camp McCall, Camp Butner, Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, or Camp Lejeune. In addition to the major installations, dozens of others dotted the state. There were around 100 in total. And industry again switched over for war production. North Carolina Shipbuilding in Wilmington produced more than 250 ships during the war. Fairchild Aircraft in Burlington made training aircraft for the Army, and mines in the Western Mountains produced silica, an important part of the radios of the time. During the Vietnam War and the Gulf War, Sunny Point kept American troops supplied with ammunition. Today, troops at Fort Bragg, Camp Lejeune, Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point, Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, and Coast Guard Station Elizabeth City stand ready to respond wherever and whenever they are needed. Here are the captions to the photographs accompanying these articles. This article, in specific, the men of the 555th Parachute Infantry Battalion, nicknamed the Triple Nickels, the U.S. Army's first all-black airborne unit, aboard their transport plane during World War II, Fort Bragg, 1943. Air show at Seymour Johnson Air Force Base in Wayne County. Two Marines worked to assemble an airplane at Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point during World War II. And tanks at Camp Polk in Raleigh during World War I. Continuing on the same theme is the next article, the Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine Article Contest Winner Intermediate Division. The title of the article is Monumental Military Men, the Defense Industry in North Carolina, and it was written by Luke Crawford as a member of Wolfpack Howling Historians, Full Armor Classical Academy in Garner, Jennifer Crawford Advisor. And Luke was the winner of the 2020 Tar Heel Junior Historian Magazine Article Contest Intermediate Division. From the Battle of Kings Mountain in 1780 to the trenches of World War I, the heroism of North Carolina has been attested by the blood of her sons who've died in the front lines of victory. That was by Governor J. Melville Broughton. This tradition of victory and bravery continues today, and it has shaped North Carolina significantly over the past 100 years. North Carolina has a wide array of industries, but one of the most crucial is its defense industry. During World War I, Fayetteville was completely transformed when construction began on Camp Bragg, which was later named Fort Bragg. It was initially used as an artillery training center and was the only permanent military installation in the state, but that has changed significantly in the last 100 years. Fort Bragg was originally built to house 16,000 soldiers and 5,700 horses and mules, and was completed after the armistice. During the war to end all wars, the North Carolina government also started to build Camp Davis near Holly Ridge. In September of 1940, the United States Congress passed laws to increase military funding, which finally found its way into the economy of North Carolina. Especially during the era of World War II, military-based construction became the largest industry in the Tar Heel State. This construction had significant economic and social impact upon the Old North State, and the employment it provided helped to end the effects of the Great Depression within our state. The Great Depression of the 1930s created a colossal catastrophe of joblessness and non-growth of the economy. However, by the summer of 1940, tens of thousands of North Carolina residents found jobs and hope in the form of Fort Bragg construction projects. Fort Bragg became the largest military camp in the nation. Additionally, Fayetteville became the third largest city in North Carolina due to the increased influx of jobs, housing, infrastructure, and people. It was an economic miracle. The same miracle occurred in the areas of Goldsboro, home of the Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, as well as Havelock, home of Cherry Point Marine Corps Air Station. Other cities simultaneously seeing growth and being hurled out of the Great Depression were New Bern, Morehead City, and Jacksonville. By 1943, North Carolina was training more troops for war than any other state. Each of these massive military bases remains in service to this day. A new kind of soldier was created in the mind of a North Carolina native, the paratrooper. William C. Lee, born in Harnett County, was put in charge of Airborne Command and has since been referred to as the father of the United States Airborne. The 82nd, which is a paratrooping company, was permanently stationed in Fort Bragg in Fayetteville after World War II. It became the first Army division to be permanently integrated, allowing all types of people to be included, especially black and white soldiers. And it has had roles in every major conflict since, other than the war in Korea. In addition to the development of paratrooper warfare, the Green Beret, an elite fighting force, also found its beginnings at Fort Bragg in the 1950s. Fort Bragg's population shrank to fewer than 20,000 until the Korean War, when it increased to more than 40,000. By the early 2000s, Fort Bragg was one of the largest military bases in the world, housing more than 45,000 soldiers and employing 8,000 civilians on 160,789 acres. The 82nd Airborne Division, 18th Airborne Corps, and 7th Special Forces Group are deployed from the post. Does the defense industry remain important in North Carolina even today? Definitely, yes. Universities such as NC State are spearheading new research into unmanned aerial vehicles for military use. North Carolina ranks number one in the United States for industry-sponsored military research. Currently, 10% of all North Carolina employment is supported by the military. North Carolina has the third largest active-duty Army presence in the United States. Federal military spending contributes $11 billion to our state's economy each year. The North Carolina defense industry has one of the largest military footprints of any state in the country. It has changed significantly over the past 100 years, but still remains a leader in defense. It has evolved from the use of horses and mules to helicopters and tanks. It has used Morse code in the past and now creates podcasts for the public. It was formerly an industry for white men only and now includes all races and women. The defense industry in North Carolina has produced monumental military men for more than a century. There's one photograph accompanying this, and its caption is, "Luke Crawford took this photo while visiting the United States Army Airborne and Special Operations Museum in Fayetteville. He was doing research for his Tar Heel Junior History Association projects." Next article, other key North Carolina industries. In this issue, you've explored some of North Carolina's most notable industries, but there's plenty more to learn about. From heavy machinery and automobiles to processing plants and banks, read on to find out more information on industry in our state. In a prior episode, we had already covered the automotive, truck, and heavy machinery industry, the nonprofit arts and culture, business and financial services, and information technology. Here are two more. Biotechnology and pharmaceuticals. The largest research park in the United States and three Tier 1 research universities attract biotech and pharma companies such as Novo Nordisk, Merck, and GlaxoSmithKline. And food processing and manufacturing. In addition to our robust agriculture industry, North Carolina is second largest in animal processing and manufacturing, and home to Tyson, Campbell's, and Smithfield. Next is the letter from the editor. What do you think? It's by Kathy East. What is work? What's a job? What does making a living really mean? You might have a job even though you're young. Maybe your job is to take out the trash, feed the family dog, or look after younger siblings. You might even earn money by pet sitting or babysitting for neighbors. We could also say your job is student. Part of going to school is to learn facts and to learn about the world. But everything you learn now will also contribute to the job you'll have as an adult. What might that be? 100 years ago, most people didn't get all that much schooling. Kids often went to work as young as 7 or 8. Some grew up working on the family farm. Before child labor laws, some kids worked long hours at dangerous jobs in textile mills just to help their families survive. Barefoot newsies got up before dawn to earn pennies selling newspapers on the corners of city streets. One thing that changed North Carolina's industries was education. Better schools were built. In 1913, the first Compulsory Attendance Act required all children between the ages of 8 and 12 to attend school for at least 4 months a year. Today, kids can go to free public schools from preschool to high school. North Carolina has developed one of the best state university systems in the country, plus a thriving network of community colleges. Better access to good education can change how we earn a living. How else is the world changing? When I was a kid, my brother earned money with an after-school paper route, and I sometimes helped him deliver papers. Girls weren't allowed to have a route. Today, most people read the news online. In 2020, the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic in the United States, many students and adults had to stay home. But computers help many of us keep learning and working. How will these times change North Carolina's industries in the future? What will the big three be when you're grown? What will you do to make a living? And how can we be ready for that future? It's cool to know that school now can help you prepare for a job in the future, even if you don't know yet what the future job might be. And remember, learning history can be a big part of that story. Here are the captions to a couple of photographs that accompany the letter from the editor. These young people might seem just like you and your friends if they were dressed in modern clothes, but a more important difference. They spent their days working long hours in a mill instead of going to school. Photographer Lewis Hines snapped this photo in 1914 at Toller, Hart, and Holt Mills in Fayetteville. Hine wrote, "All the children went in when the whistle blew, and I saw most of them at work the next day when I went through the spinning room at 10 a.m. Some of them are surely under 12 years old." And the other photograph, in 2021, many young people are doing virtual work, are doing virtual schoolwork through home computers. And then a sidebar article, think about it. The world has changed dramatically in the last 100 years. Education choices, job choices. Computers changed everything. What do you think making a living will look like in the future when you're grown and go to work? How about 100 years from now? What new technology might be invented to affect how we work? In the last article in this issue, Making a Living, Making a Difference. People work to earn money and make a living, but it's great when you can do something you love. Even better when your work makes a difference. Did someone you know just get a COVID-19 vaccine? Well, meet Dr. Kizmikia Kizzy Corbett. She helped develop the vaccine. She's a scientist at the National Institutes of Health. And hooray, she's from North Carolina. Dr. Corbett grew up in Hillsboro and went to school at Oak Lane Elementary, Standback Middle, and Orange High. She went to college at the University of Maryland. In 2014, she earned a Ph.D. in microbiology and immunology from UNC Chapel Hill. In February 2021, Dr. Corbett was named to the Time Magazine 100 Next list. Dr. Anthony Fauci wrote, "Her work will have a substantial impact on ending the worst respiratory disease pandemic in more than 100 years. And there's a photograph with the caption, "Dr. Kizmikia Corbett talks about the research that helped develop the Moderna and Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines during President Joe Biden's visit to the National Institute of Health's Vaccine Research Center on February 11, 2021. Also pictured is Dr. Anthony S. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at NIH. Here's a quick preview of the next issue, the fall 2021 issue of the Tar Heel Junior Historian. It's titled Resilience, Tar Heels, Tragedies, and Triumphs. And here are some of the articles that we'll be reading from that issue. Quakers Face Challenges in Colonial North Carolina. Omar Ibn Said, Holding On to Who You Are. Eastern Band of the Cherokee Indians. Never Forget. Remembering Abraham Galloway. Diamond City, Living on the Edge for Generations. So Great the Devastation, the 1916 flood in western North Carolina. Stories from our collection. From Posters to Photographs, How Objects Show North Carolinians' Experience in World War II. Polio and Perseverance, How a North Carolina County Named Catawba Built a Miracle. My Journey to Change Education in America, an interview with Dorothy Counts Scroggins. These and many more articles will be read from the Resilience issue. But right now, we've run out of time for today's episode of North Carolina History. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ed Tremblay, reading from the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.